The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Advertising Corporation and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Reoccurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found in his Washington Times column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for The Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you wonder why God doesn't do a better job of making himself known. Why must he limit himself to the Bible or to sermons from churches? Well, he doesn't. That's my short answer. God reveals himself in many places, even in the arts. If you followed this show for any length of time, you already know by now that God used the arts to bring me to Christ as a college student years ago. That's why the theme of our program is not only Christianity, but Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. Today will be a pop culture edition with film critic Mark Boobian, who joins us every couple of months. Today he'll be commenting on some of the winners and losers at the recent Academy Awards ceremony, after I make a few snapshot-length comments on the latest news. What do I have to say about Charlie Sheen? The exact same thing I had to say about Tiger Woods. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. His life and his lifestyle are none of my business and none of your business, and they do not suddenly become our business simply because the man is a celebrity. I'm going to go out on a limb here and suggest that with riots in the Middle East and protests almost turning into riots in our own Midwest and earthquakes to top it off, there may just be one or two subjects a little more important and newsworthy than good old Charlie. I have been busy writing about such news events, and you can catch my comments on Town Hall or San Diego Rostra or the Washington Times. The horrific earthquake and subsequent tsunami waves of Japan are bringing an untold suffering that many of us cannot even begin to imagine. Those little rumblings we feel from time to time in San Diego, they don't even come close. Our hearts go out to the victims and families of the victims. We who have never been through such events have much to be grateful for. Not that anyone will be completely spared from any aftermath at all. Many will try to exploit this tragedy. It's already starting to happen. It won't be long before the lectures on global warming kick in. Now, I said that immediately in my Friday blog. And since then, it's already started. But brace yourself for much, much more. Even though Japan has been having earthquakes since long before the pop phrase global warming was even coined, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Any phenomenon having to do with water, land, or sky is now part of global warming. If your dog knocked a Slurpee out of your hand and it evaporated quickly, helped by Rover's rapturous licking, people would still blame global warming, or at least its twin brother, climate change. Now, I'm not saying that means I don't care about the environment. And make no mistake, a collapsed nuclear reactor as a result of the earthquake is extremely serious. Of course, there are health concerns. Of course, there are atmosphere concerns. Blaming the earthquake itself on the environment is another matter altogether, however. And just to show you that I'm a fair guy, equally as willing to critique those in my own camp, I dread to think how many evangelical pulpits around the country this morning shared sermons about earthquakes being a sign of the end times or the second coming of Christ. Possibly your pastor had his sermon finished by Friday morning, so he didn't get to it today. But if that's the case, he probably will get to it next week. If ever there was a time to skip church and catch up on some yard work, these next couple of Sundays might be the ones. But what you don't want to miss on Sunday is the Bob Siegel Show, especially when we're joined by film critic and short story writer Mark Boobian. Mark, welcome to our show.
Thanks a lot for having me, Bob. And, you know, boy, I'll tell you, the tsunami really was a huge event. I mean, the earthquake and tsunami. I've been paying a lot of attention to the tsunami as a surfer, and just the images coming through of the destruction that it wrought, it's just, I had no idea. When the Indonesian earthquake struck, you know, 200,000 people died from the tsunami. That was about 4 years ago.
And that one was a complete surprise. There was no warning system.
No. And, you know, and I actually couldn't even fathom how so many people died. But then after seeing the images in the last couple of days, it really hits home and really makes sense, you know, because it was just such an absolutely devastating and unstoppable force. And so I just, my prayers really do go out for the Japanese people, because it is, they're just suffering greatly right now.
It's just horrific. It's almost unimaginable. And I keep hearing different figures. I think just a moment ago on the news, they were saying something like, 1,800. But then I'm hearing estimates in the tens of thousands. So I guess there's a difference between the estimated death toll and the ones that are officially confirmed, where they're actually matching a body with an ID. So
yeah, I
guess that must be the difference.
I don't know. And, you know, right now I would think that it'd be very difficult for them to make an official toll, because they're just so busy trying to find people and save them and to dig out of the mess that they're
in. Entire towns have disappeared.
Yeah.
The entire population of towns. This is just unthinkable stuff.
Yeah, it is. I mean, and I wouldn't, if I hadn't seen some of the video images that I had seen in the last few days, I wouldn't even believe that. It's just absolutely staggering. I did see an image today, a really sad image of the dead floating in the water after it's receded. And there were hundreds of dead bodies in this one image. And it was only one.
I haven't seen any picture like that.
Yeah,
that must be harrowing.
It was awful, and I'm betting that it's going to be in the many thousands, if not into the hundreds of thousands.
I wouldn't be at all surprised.
Yeah, because
and then of course this nuclear reactor melting down. Oh my gosh, it's just one thing after another.
Yeah, that's
this
really
is something
bad.
That's going to stay. I mean, that's going to stay around a long time.
Yeah.
Kind of radiation. They're saying that even we on the West Coast could be in danger of that radiation with the winds and things.
Right. The wind blows towards us from Japan. It's a long way to go, but it does. My other fear also is that it's right next to the ocean, and Chernobyl, which they have said was you can't really compare the two because of the design of the reactors, but still Chernobyl, you can't go to Chernobyl still today. It's been 30 years, 20, 25 years.
Oh, was that the Russian one?
The Russian one.
Yeah. For the longest time, they were insisting it was no problem.
Right.
Other countries were offering to help. And they were like, oh, we don't need any help.
Yeah, they sure, but they did. And the town of Chernobyl, the city of Chernobyl, is a ghost town. Nobody can live there because it's irradiated. And there are like tours that people do around the vicinity, but you can't go into certain places still at all. I mean, if you go on a tour, like the tour guide talks about having to change his shoes because his shoes get irradiated from the ground. And I mean, that's how bad it is. So my fear is that this type of radiation would get into the ocean and then spread worldwide, because, you know, it would fall into the sea.
Well, let's see. You're a surfer and I'm a body surfer. Right. Do we need to change sports here?
Or change wetsuits.
Or change coasts. Type of wetsuits. Well, they don't have very good surfing on the East Coast.
It's a different type.
Pretty Mickey Mouse waves on the East Coast. You know, it's interesting, Mark, because I'm not one of those people who feels that we shouldn't have any nuclear reactors. But I would think that in a place like Japan, which is prone to have earthquakes, and a place like Southern California, we have nuclear reactors here. That's just not a good idea to build a nuclear reactor.
Right.
On a place where you're close to the San Andreas Fault or the kinds of faults they have in Japan.
Yeah, I know. Right. Well, this is proof positive that it's not a good idea. But, you know, the Japanese apparently don't have any other source of power because they're a small isolated island and they have to get power from they don't have dams, and they would have to import all of their oil. They can't get any themselves. They don't have coal reserves or anything like we do here. So they would be 100% dependent on the Arab nations.
Yeah, and then here in America, those that don't want us to have nuclear power don't want us to use oil either. And so sooner or later, you know, a windmill
Something's
just ain't going to cut it. You know.
Yeah, hopefully, I actually am a fan of wind power, to be honest. And
well, if it worked,
it is getting better.
Well, that's good.
So, but it's
they should give the little rabbit in the cage on the treadmill another chance too. That might help.
Yeah, but definitely if you're, you know, if you're ever on the fence about nuclear power, this certainly is, would change your mind.
Well, Mark, let me proclaim my ignorance and give you a chance to sound really intelligent at the same time, because you are a surfer. Like I said, I'm only a body surfer. That barely counts for anything. We both love the ocean, but I was hearing on the news on Friday when they were talking about how the tsunami could even hit the West Coast. They were saying things like, we may get waves as big as 6 feet. And I'm thinking, that doesn't sound that big to me. I mean, I'm 6 feet. And then I was hearing them even call 3 feet. Now, somebody has since explained to me that there's a lot of volume with that. So it would be 6 feet that goes on for maybe 10 minutes.
Miles. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess it didn't sound to me, I was going, if they were talking about 20, 30 foot waves, that'd be one thing. But 6 foot wave, 3 foot wave, that didn't sound like it's all that dangerous. So maybe you could explain. Clarify that a little bit.
Well, the difference between a regular wave that we surf and that we see normally from generated by storms is in the technical terminology, they're short wavelength waves, wavelength like a sine wave or the radio waves and stuff. They're you use wavelength and frequency to describe a wave. So a regular wave is a short wavelength. So the wave comes in and it breaks and it's done. That's it. It's over. But a tsunami is a very long wavelength wave, so there's a lot behind it. So the wave comes in, and then it doesn't stop coming in. It keeps coming.
So it's like the movie Escape from L.A., where he was surfing, right?
Right, actually, yes.
On the wave on the surfboard and surfed right into the city.
Yeah, that's exactly what it's like. And it keeps coming and coming. And so in Santa Cruz and in Crescent City, they both had damage from the tsunami. And the tsunami was 5 to 7 feet. I don't know the exact figures for the two locations.
So it's not like a 5 foot wave that just breaks on our shore and then dissipates.
Goes away. No, okay. It's more like a 5 or 6 foot change of tide. And we used to refer to these as tidal waves. And I actually like that term better because
I thought there was a difference between a tidal wave and a tsunami. Are you saying those are synonymous terms?
Yeah, they were synonymous.
I thought there was
a
distinction. There's no distinction between the two?
No, as far as I know. But I think that what they wanted to do is get away from the notion that it's a tidal force like the moon causing the wave. It's not. It's an earthquake.
Okay.
But it acts like a tide. And so what happens is you get a 6 or 7 foot rise in the ocean, like a rise in the tide. But a tidal rise occurs over 6 hours.
And it just takes a long time for it to finally break and dissipate.
Yeah, when the tide changes, you've seen the tide change here.
Right.
You know, it happens over a long period of time, and it's slow, and it slowly fills in, and then it drains out. And there's no, you know, we don't have any damage from that or any waves sort of generated from that. But when a tsunami comes in, that 6, 7, 8 foot change in tide occurs over 15 minutes.
Okay, we're with film critic Mark Booby, and we are going to get to the Academy Awards, but this earthquake was a pretty big elephant in the room to ignore. We'll be right back.
As if you haven't figured it out by now, Bob is mildly opinionated about the ultimate issues of life. But Bob also respects the opinions of others. To offer your own viewpoint or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, give us a call at 1-888-344-1170. 1-888-344-1170. You can also reach Bob through Facebook, Twitter, or questions@bobsiegel.net.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. I'm here with film critic Mark Booby. And Mark, any more thoughts on the tsunami before we get into the movies? I know it's kind of unusual to go into a light, fluffy subject like movies, but that was the show that we planned. But I know that you're very concerned about
I mean,
this, as everybody is. Any other thoughts on this?
It's a terrible thing. I mean, Just to finish up what I was saying about it, I mean, the change, a tsunami is sort of like a change in tide, but it's as though the whole ocean comes in all at once, as opposed to changing over 6 hours. So in Crescent City and in Santa Cruz, the tsunami actually was approximately the change in tide. So we'll see that much water come in and out on a normal day during the winter time, but it just doesn't happen all at once. It happens over 6 hours. So it's the all at once occurrence that makes it a dangerous thing. But in Japan, now the images I saw of the tsunami coming in from the ocean, they actually had images, films of it encroaching upon the coast. And those waves were in the third, they were predicted to be about 3 meters, 30, 35 feet. I think they were in the 40-foot range, and there are stacks of them coming in, and there's no stopping that wave. That's a 40-foot wave of ocean coming in, and it's just an unstoppable force. And so, I mean, if anybody's watched the news, they've seen images of that, and it's just absolutely devastating. And again, I just, you know, I watch so many things destroyed, and the scale is so grand and so gigantic. You don't see people from the distance, but I'm sure that I've seen thousands of people die in front of my face on TV in the last couple of days without even knowing it.
And it's almost unfathomable. We're almost like in denial to even see it. It's just hard to grasp.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's just such a magnificently huge scale. So like I said, I definitely, they need our prayer and support in Japan. So it's a very sad thing. So I guess now we should transition over to
another sad thing this year.
Right.
Perhaps not actually, quite as sad, but the Academy Awards were a pretty sad presentation, I thought.
And
now I'm talking about the
awards ceremony itself.
There were some decent movies that were nominated, but the awards ceremony itself was
sad.
It just bored me out of my gourd.
Right. Well, they're trying to be hip and cool, and they had two younger people come in, and
both of whom are good actors,
and very good actors, but they're not comedians, and so they're going to just be able to do the lines and maybe ad lib a little bit. But it's not like Billy Crystal or Bob Hope now.
And the biggest mistake was when they showed a montage of Bob Hope hosting it, and all it did was remind us of how good it once was. It was such a mistake to play that right in the middle of this thing. It's like, here's the way the Academy Awards used to be.
Right, exactly. How you want it to be tonight, but it's not going to be like that tonight. And by the way, let's bring Billy Crystal out.
Yeah,
and hope he stays.
It's like inviting somebody over for dinner. You like steak, don't you? Yeah, well, we're not having that. You like chicken, though, right? Yeah, well, we're not having that either.
Right, it's too bad. But, you know, you can't blame the actors. It's unfortunately.
No,
it was just the
if someone was stupid enough to ask me to host the Academy Awards, I would do it.
Right,
whether I was the best man for the job or not.
Yeah.
But I think I could blindfoldly do it better than they did.
Yeah,
maybe
right.
I shouldn't say that.
It's the material you get, though. So, you know,
that's a safe thing for me to say because I will never be given that opportunity. Right. So it doesn't matter.
Yeah, but and the funny thing is they're trying to be relevant. You know, the Academy Awards show to the MPAA who runs it is actually worth a lot of money. It brings in a lot of revenue. And so they want the show itself to be good and to attract a large audience. And so actually, you know, when they nominate their movies and the actors, part of those nominations is trying to draw an audience. It's not just to recognize what's good throughout the year. It's trying to get people to watch the show.
Which is why we went from 5 Academy Award nominees is funny because all the other categories still are the regular 5. And just and then when it comes to Best Picture, there's 10.
They should have done 10 of a few others at least. Yeah. And this year, it was all of the best movies really were animated films, the most attended films. And not only wasn't it 10, it wasn't even 5 for animated films. It was 3. And the one
that you liked wasn't even nominated. The one about that's based on Rapunzel and her hair.
Yeah.
It got nominated for best song, but it didn't get nominated as best animated.
Right. And it deserved
movie.
It could have easily been nominated. They could have added that to the list.
Well, now you did like Toy Story 3, though. So would you say it deserved to win the best animated?
Or
better animated movies?
I think that the other nomination, I was glad that they at least recognized How to Train Your Dragon, which I think was a very, very spectacular film. And I think a better movie, overall than Toy Story, really, if you take it all into account, because, you know, you want to look at not just the story and the acting, but you want to look at the cinematography and the presentation. And How to Train Your Dragon was a 3D movie, and it was actually really an engaging 3D movie. It was very well done. Some of the scenes are just amazing in 3D. You're on the back of the dragon flying like you're on behind the main character as he rides his dragon, diving through the clouds and skimming the ocean. It's just it was so well done and such a great example of how to do 3D correctly. And cinema, I don't know exactly how to say the word, cinematically, that's the word I'm looking for.
Cinematically speaking,
to sound very, very pompous and sure of myself. Yes, very cinematically speaking, it was a very, very beautiful movie. So I think it deserved it much more than Toy Story 3. Now, Toy Story 3 was also released as a 3D movie, but really, Pixar is not that great at 3D. It's fine, it looks good, but you could go see the 2D version of Toy Story 3 and get exactly the same amount out of it. However, How to Train Your Dragon, you really are getting more from the 3D than the 2D version. So that's only one aspect of the film. Like I said, the story of How to Train Your Dragon, the characters, the notion that we have a handicapped character at the end. It's just a really good movie, a really good example for children to see. And it was very unique and very well done. So I loved that movie. I wish it had won, but it had no chance. You know, Pixar does a movie and they win. So
now, what's up with nominating a movie for? I mean, for years I wished they'd had in Best Animated category. All those years of classical Disney movies, they were never even qualified. They usually won for Best Musical Score, Best Song. Finally, they come up with Best Animated Movie, which I think is fitting. But then they take one of the animated movies like Toy Story. And they also nominate it for Best Picture. That makes zero sense, because if they're going to do that, then why isn't there a Best Science Fiction and Best Drama?
I agree with you totally, Bob. And what's even sillier is it's the one that's going to win. You know, it's nominated for Best Picture, Best Animated Film.
Yeah.
And maybe that's why they only did three.
I don't think anybody believed it was also going to carry off Best Picture the year after it won Best Animated.
Yeah, and none of the buzz. The buzz ahead of time was that it would even so. But, you know, again, it's all part of trying to be relevant and trying to attract an audience. They nominated it for Best Picture to get the kids watching. Hey, Mom and Dad, I want to watch this. Because, look, Toy Story's up for Best Picture, the movie I watched. So
now, you're saying the buzz was that it was going to win
no,
Best
it was
Picture?
No buzz at all, it had even a chance. I mean, for sure, everybody, that's going to win Best Animated Film.
Okay, I'm here with film critic Mark Booby and talking about their Academy Awards, the winners, the losers, what he thought should have won. We'll be right back. This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539. W&S Electric. Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. I'm here with film critic Mark Booby in the aftermath of the Academy Awards.
Thanks, Bob. Now, you know, the other issue with the Academy Awards and people not really watching it anymore is that, you know, they've got a couple of problems that they're just not dealing with, that they're really out of touch with the audience. One of the issues, I think, is they really come across as being inauthentic. Now, a really, really good example that hit home for me was when The Social Network won for best...
It won about three, writer. Didn't it?
It won something for... In the Golden Globes, though. Oh. So the acceptance speech by Aaron Sorkin, who wrote The Social Network...
Oh, he also wrote A Few Good Men, which was a movie I
liked. Okay. Yeah, well, he's a good writer. I mean, there's no denying it. Now, he makes Mark Zuckerberg, the CEO of Facebook, look pretty bad in the movie. There's a line in the movie where a girl says, I don't want you to
think... Hollywood likes to make CEOs look bad, period.
Yeah, but he's the main character in the film. I mean, they're trashing their main character. So this girl says to him at the beginning of the film, I don't want you to think girls won't like you because you're a nerd. It's because you're a jerk. But she doesn't say jerk. She says something else.
Uh-huh, something we can't say on the radio.
Okay, so this is the line that starts the movie, and he is a jerk throughout the film. He's a
But you're saying
the jerk.
The real character, the real person it's based on is not
I
like
have
that?
No idea. I don't know anything about Mark Zuckerberg at all, but Aaron Sorkin wrote this. So here's Aaron Sorkin's acceptance speech for the best, I think it was best screenplay or best picture during the Golden Globes prior to the Oscars. He thanks Mark Zuckerberg and says, you're a beautiful person. As though he's, you know, you're a wonderful human being. You're
really?
A beautiful human being.
After just
trashing
him. Into him and scathing him over the coals.
Yeah,
like
okay. Now, I can't kind of reconcile those two. And Aaron Sorkin was criticized for being very strongly critical of Mark Zuckerberg, the main character in The Social Network. So that's probably why he said it. But it comes across as totally inauthentic and fake. So why am I going to watch an awards show where people are going to get up and lie to you, to your face, when they accept an award that they're being given for doing something supposedly wonderful? So makes me not want to watch the show. So the inauthenticity is really an issue, a problem. Now, the other issue, I think, that's even more of a problem is that the Oscars kind of tend to come across as self-important. And they really need to kind of move away from that. Now, it doesn't always come across that way, but it can. Especially, like, a good example is when they talk politics from the microphone when they're giving things. As though, you know, your
like
actors,
we're waiting with bated breath to know what some
they
actor's
think,
opinion
as if
is
we
of
didn't
things.
Already. I mean, now, if I was giving a speech and it was my chance to say something outside of to the world, you know, for them to hear my voice, I may use that as a podium, sure. And there is an argument for that, but it does kind of sound a little bit like you're patting yourself on the back for, you know, making a stand, so to speak. And then this year, okay, so they're, you know, they don't want us, the Oscars needs to make more money. They're trying to draw a bigger audience. So what does the MPAA do to draw a bigger audience? They do a new thing where they're going to link the internet up with the Oscars this year. And what they do is they have this backstage thing where they have cameras and microphones backstage, so you can watch the people that won the awards after they come backstage.
And can you watch the losers cussing out the people that beat them?
Maybe you could, actually. But they charged for it. Okay, so that's problem number one.
Boy, that would be money well spent.
Yeah, right. I mean, like, I even care. Okay, problem number two, it's totally degrading to me as a person. It's like the little people. You little people got to watch us big people at the awards backstage because you really want to see us win the awards. I mean, again, that sounds totally, they're totally being self-important. Like they're the most important thing in the world. Now, I know the actors and the directors, and they're not all thinking that themselves, but, you know, the MPAA doing stuff like this, it really comes across that way. So, you know, and the last draw this year was... Okay, The King's Speech won the Best Picture. Absolutely did deserve it. It was a great movie. Great acting.
I finally got a chance to see it. It was a wonderful movie. It was delightful. The acting was just superb.
Right. I didn't even want to see it, and I loved it. I mean, that's how good it was. So it's predicated on this guy, the King of England, having a speech impediment, but then World War II rolls around, and he's got to give this speech to motivate and to raise the morale of the people as war is declared against Hitler. This is a big deal. This is one of the most important
speeches.
Yeah,
and even though the king no longer has the power that Parliament has, as a figurehead, it was still very important to
keep the people
inspired during that time.
Yeah, he's the charismatic leader. He's the conscience and the, you know, of the people, so to speak. So this speech is imperative. Now, what does the Academy do when they announce, they prior to announcing the Best Picture, they play this speech, which is very good. They play this speech, and then they show you clips of all the movies. Now, this speech is one of the most important speeches of the 20th century because it was about us taking a stand against Hitler. Us, the collective us, England, technically. And they're equating that with a bunch of movies. Now, I love movies, and I think they are important.
See, I didn't even catch that. I watched the Academy Awards. You're saying that I remember them showing a montage, and I remember there being a speech. I didn't realize
it was that
because I hadn't seen that movie yet.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't have made that connection based on the footage I was watching that right. went with it.
You know, and it was good. It was a good montage. I don't want to, you know, put them down for that. But it really did feel like this is inappropriate. You're not declaring war against Hitler. You're not fighting World War II. You're not tackling evil. You're making movies which are important, which are, you know, a great form of art, and you're doing a wonderful job. But this is a little too much. So this kind of stuff is really, I think, what the Academy is missing. They're doing this stuff, and they don't realize that it's really off-putting. And I think that's one of the reasons people aren't watching the Oscars. You can have the best.
What kind of ratings did the Oscars get this year?
They were down like some huge percent.
Even
like
more 10%. Than last year?
Down yeah, they're down like 10% from last year. So, and last year was a bad year for them. So, and that's why they had the two people that they had this year come in, because they wanted to raise ratings and it didn't work.
The other thing that bugs me is they're trying to cut down on the amount of time in an acceptance speech. Okay, I can get that. So they'll start playing the music.
Right.
But if there's two or three people receiving the same award and they each have a statuette, one guy hogs all the time, then the other guy goes to open his mouth and and they take him right off. It just seems totally unfair.
Right, and they actually did that at the King's Speech Acceptance, where somebody did. And then, okay, this is the last thing and the very last award they're offering, and the guy, one of the people gives his thank yous, and another one steps up to the microphone, starts, and they start playing the music. And I'm like, come on, it's the end of the show. It's not like you have to get him off the stage to get someone else to come on. So, yeah, it's like they're doing everything they can to shoot themselves in the foot to make the show seem bad.
Yeah,
so
I think
it's really a bummer.
They need a major overhaul. I used to always look forward to the Academy Awards. After this year, I don't think I'd lose any sleep if I missed it.
Yeah, it's just not that engaging.
We had good candy, though. We were still eating Red Vines. And,
oh, okay. See, that's
Hershey bars and things like that. Okay, we'll be right back. Film critic Mark Boubien, a couple of weeks ago, they finally had the Academy Awards. Winners and losers. We talked about the award presentation itself. We'll get into a little more of the actual movies that Mark thinks should have won.
If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out Bob's daily blog on townhall.com. Bob is also a regular contributor for San Diego Rostra and San Diego Newsroom. And don't forget his website, www.bobsiegel.net. Here, you download past radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and get information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net. BobSiegel.net.
Welcome back to our program. I'm joined with film critic Mark Boubien. Now, Mark, one of your fortes is finding Christian themes in films. What kind of Christian themes did you find in some of the crop that was nominated this year?
Well,
and what ones had decidedly non-Christian themes?
Yeah, well, let's see. Let me take on 2100.
Well, the attempted resurrection of the Academy Awards could we say that about the presentation? They at least attempted a resurrection, but they accomplished more of a crucifixion, I think. So
they went straight to hell.
Yeah,
no resurrection there for the Academy themselves this year. Well, okay. Toy Story 3. Actually, I said 127 hours, but Toy Story 3, that has some of the more obvious to me Christian themes or elements in it. Now, first off, Toy Story 3 is a beautifully done movie. Now, I talked about How to Train Your Dragon really deserving the award for Best Animated, but I don't want to put down Toy Story 3
a lot.
It's still a great movie. It's a wonderful movie, too. So it's really heartfelt, and the emotion is really honest. And the other thing that's great about it is the characters have already been developed, and you really go there having a connection with them already. It's like they're a part of your family. You have a real attachment to them already. And in a way that a lot of other films you really don't have. I mean, this is just, there's just something about the way Pixar created these characters that is really, really beautifully appealing and engaging. So I think this helped make the movie even more poignant. Now, the one scene that I really loved in the film is that the toys are in a trash, in a garbage dump. They're being about to be destroyed in this inferno, and they all realize that this is the end. They're about to die, and instead of screaming or running in fear or being horrified, they all reach out to each other, and they grasp hands. And it's all of the toys that we have come to love over the years, and it's as though, you know, they realize that death is inevitable, and yet they're going to face it.
Do they actually die in this film? I can't imagine they stay
that
way. That
would be a spoiler. No, they don't die.
Okay. I can't imagine that would be popular with kids if they stayed.
No, it would have been very hard to pull off. But actually,
I was writing the movie, they might have stayed dead, but I don't think that sells in Hollywood these days.
They could have actually. This moment was so poignant that it would have worked if this ended the film.
Well, you know, in one of the most famous children's novels of all time, Charlotte's Web, Charlotte dies at the end of, and it's very effective. I mean, it's not that kids can't handle something that's a little more bittersweet.
Yeah, exactly. And this, but what I liked about this is that it was really, they're really dignified about how they are facing death. It's caring. They're not fearful. Well, they're afraid. You can see that they're afraid, but they're courageous enough to face death together. And it's them being together and the love they have for each other that kind of bolsters their ability to face the impending death. Now, the director of Toy Story actually said that this was supposed to represent hell, the inferno that they were facing.
It's a pretty good candidate for hell. We're talking about an inferno.
Right. There you go. Yeah. He was very effective at that. So, just the whole notion of facing death with dignity and with courage, I think is a really good message. It's not specifically Christian, but still it's a good message, and Christianity deals with death and resurrection. So, you know, there's some tie-in, but loosely, now, the movie that I was going to jump on right away was 127 Hours. One of the key things about 127 Hours, this is the movie about the guy that he falls in a canyon, a rock falls on his arm.
Now, was this an autobiographical thing?
Yes.
Is this based on a true story?
Absolutely.
And
a
was
true
it
story.
Filmed as a, because I haven't seen this, I couldn't tell if it was filmed as a documentary or filmed as a fictitious remake.
Filmed as a reenactment, but
did they film it in documentary style?
No, they filmed it regularly.
Okay, it was okay.
So it was a regular film.
It's hard to tell that from the scenes they showed.
Yeah, there's some shots of him. He's got a video camera of his own that he talks into, which I don't know if he had it with him in real life, but it was a way for them to have him have dialogue.
Now, this was a mountain climber, this guy, or am I getting that?
Yeah, a mountain climber, canyon climber. He's a an extreme sports guy.
And he was the only one of an expedition that survived?
No, so what he did is he wanted to go hiking in Utah, and he didn't tell anyone where he was going.
Oh, I see.
He didn't even know what he didn't say, and it just sort of slipped his mind. It wasn't that he was deliberately, it's just he didn't think of it. And you don't think anything's going to happen to you when you go out. So it was just a mistake he made, and so no one knew he was gone, and the rock fell on his hand and wedged it in, and he couldn't get it out, and it actually took, I think, 10 people and a crane or something to actually ultimately remove the rock from his disembodied hand once he'd cut his arm off. So in that's in real life. They don't show that in the movie. So he was really stuck. He would have never gotten out if he didn't cut his arm off. But one of the things
were they able to surgically put his arm back?
No, not at all. It was dead. I mean, he had been 127 hours, I think it's 5 days. Dead 5 days.
But now if it had been just a couple of hours, do they have the ability to do that now? To reconnect it?
The way he did it, probably not.
No, okay, that's probably true.
But, you know, the thing is it wasn't just that it had been a couple of hours of separation from the arm. It had been 5 days of his arm having no circulation at all, and it was decaying. He actually says the real life, his name's Aaron Ralston, says that, you know, he could smell the decaying flesh. So he had to cut, you know, obviously he had to cut his arm off to escape. It's interesting. It's a spoiler, but everybody knows that going in. That's the whole sort of the MacGuffin, as they say, for the movie. And that's the conflict. And it's a horrifying scene, but it's very important to the story. Now, Danny Boyle, who directed the film, is not really that great dealing with Christian issues. And to illustrate this, this guy, Aaron Ralston, is a Christian. And he prayed during his time in the canyon stuck. And he actually...
You mean in reality?
In real life.
Did he do that in the movie?
No.
Oh.
And that's a bummer. It's too bad. They almost completely ignored it. Now, there's one moment where right when he frees himself, you know, he cuts his arm off and he's free. He pauses and looks up and says, thank you. But I missed it the first time and I went back and I looked at it again. And he did, you know, he said, thank you. And so he's obviously thanking God at that moment. Obvious to me because I know Aaron Ralston's a Christian. But that's the only acknowledgement of God's role in this event. And Aaron Ralston himself actually credits God with helping him through it. And he actually, here's a quote from Aaron Ralston. He says, it was God that spoke to me and gave me the opportunity, and I took the action to be able to get myself out. So it was the combined forces of faith and free will. Now, that's a very profound thing to be saying, and this is about cutting his own arm off.
Has this guy expressed, the real person, any resent or regret that his Christianity was
left out of the... No, he actually helped with the movie a lot.
Okay, so he may not have been that bothered that they took
Maybe
his
not.
Christianity out of
it. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. He's never said anything about the end product, but... I mean, I probably, if they made a movie about my life and then took the Christian stuff out... I don't think I'd go and badmouth the guys afterwards. So,
yeah, but boy, if you even put your arm into the movie, you deserve some kind of say in it. Okay, we'll be back with Mark Boubian. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. To build your own website without a lot of cost and trouble? Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to tell you about Web Studio. Web Studio allows people to create their own websites simply and easily without knowing HTML. With Web Studio, you avoid the learning curve of front page and the expense of a web designer. Web Studio has 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and everything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com. Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. We're here with film critic Mark Boubian discussing the Academy Awards nominees.
Thanks, Bob. Now, we did mention the King's Speech already. That was the winner, so we definitely you know, have to give them credit. That was a very good movie, extremely well acted and beautifully filmed, and just a very well done movie. And, you know, I actually, when it won, I was kind of like, well, I'm glad it's not The Social Network that won, because that was the one, that was the movie that
people
really
thought. Have you
noticed
that movies made in England tend to win Academy Awards? I mean, I thought it was a great movie, but sometimes you wonder if the movie that's from England that's nominated is kind of the obligatory winner.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never thought about that, but in some way that's true. The English Patient was
Horrible movie, a horribly long movie.
An immorality tale is how I put it. It's about being immoral from its core to the, you know, from its theme. And that would be a worthy to even talk about in a show of its own. But The King's Speech was not like that. Was not an immorality tale. It's about friendship, and it's about, I think, in terms of Christianity, you know, there's this idea that there are people that are better than other people. We have this, you know, racism is predicated upon that. This whole notion that I was talking about earlier about Hollywood, you get to see the rich and the famous backstage. It's as though they're better than poor little old me, and I want to watch them. And royalty, royal people, are another example of this. Well, in Christianity, we are all equal.
Well, not only that, we're not only all equal. In Christianity, we're all royalty. We're told we're all kings and priests.
Oh, there's a good point, Bob. Very good. So, yeah, I mean, we're all children of God. And I think The King's Speech is a really good movie in the sense that it kind of breaks through the barrier. It's about breaking through the barrier of the notion of royalty, that of worthiness to be friends with the king. You know, he's the king. He's elevated above everyone else. You can't touch him. You can't address him as you know, I forget his nickname in the film, but, you know, you can't use his nickname. You can't talk to him as an equal in any way, shape, or form.
And I like how that tutor said either we talk as equals or
we don't talk
at
all.
Yeah, he had a lot of brass.
Right, he did. And I think that was a very impressive.
And then
thing
later they find out he's not even a credentialed tutor, and that just kind of socks it to the king even more.
And he doesn't back down. He was awesome. Like when it's revealed, he just stands there and smiles and says, "I never claimed to be credentialed." That was an awesome scene.
Well, he had the experience.
Yeah,
which
he
is
did.
Better than the credential.
And he says to the king at that point, you know, what these guys needed when the experience I gained was in World War I. That people couldn't talk after the horrors of World War I. What I discovered is people just needed someone to talk to, somebody that would listen, somebody that was there to kind of take their burden with them and share it with them. And that's what he wanted to do for the king. Now, that's very Christian. That's what Christ does for us. He's our intercessor, is one of the terms in Christianity, and he shares our burden. He says, you know, my yoke is light. Is that right? You've got to give
my
a
yoke
quote,
is
Bob.
Easy and my burden is light.
There you go. Okay. I'm not the hottest guy with Bible.
Very
quotes.
Close.
So yeah, I mean, so that ties in very well with Christianity, and it's just a very well done film. Even if, you know, these are all thematic elements. It's not a preachy movie by any means, and probably the people would say it's not even intended to tie in with Christianity specifically, but these things kind of do. And that's what you got me here for, Bob, to point them out.
Well, that's kind of funny because Hollywood doesn't like the word English if we're talking about making it our national language, but they sure like the word English if they want to know what movie should win Academy Awards. That's Hollywood's right. Own little eccentricity.
Yeah, right. Well, that gave us The Bridge on the River Kwai, an English film, and Lawrence of Arabia,
and
also.
They were two sensational films,
absolutely.
Both by the same director, David Lean.
Yeah,
fantastic director.
We can't fault Hollywood all the way.
Oh, no, I'm not saying that. The English do make superb movies, but Hollywood's it's kind of quirky.
Yeah, that's true. Now, another great movie was Winter's Bone, which I went in kind of cold. I didn't know anything about it. Didn't see a single scene.
Now, that wasn't nominated for Best Picture.
It was, absolutely.
Oh, it was.
But
that one of those 10?
It was so under the radar. It's the lowest
grossing. Did it win anything at all? I don't remember.
Oh, no. But
I barely remember hearing it mentioned at the
right, ceremony. Because it earned almost no money. It's the lowest earner since a Best Picture nominee since 1983. So that's how little money it made. That's not including inflation. So, that, you know, with the $10 ticket price. It really didn't make very much money, but it was a very good movie. It's a little slow, very kind of a pedantic pace, but it's acted so well. It's almost like this year was about good, well-acted films being best pictures.
And what was the storyline for this thing?
It's about a girl who's told her father, she's a very poor family in the Ozarks. This girl is taking care of her brother and sister and mother because her mother's handicapped. And she's told that the father, who's a criminal, has put the house up for his bail and he's skipped on the bail. So they're going to be evicted from their house if they don't find the dad and get him back to his trial. And ultimately, it's about them finding him dead. He's dead. And then you kind of get this sense up front. He's dead. So now the girl has to find proof that he's dead and in order to save the house and the family. And the acting is absolutely superb. Superb to the, I mean, the girl is it's this beautiful girl from, you know, Hollywood actress that you've seen in like TV shows. And I don't think she's been in a soap opera, but she's, you know, absolutely beautiful. But, you know, she's kind of dressed down and very, she's dirty. And, you know, they live in this rundown shack because they are the definition of dirt poor. And she just plays this girl who's really tough and gritty. You know, it reminds me of True Grit. I actually thought of True Grit when I saw this movie, even though I haven't seen the new True Grit, but she had what would be called True Grit in this film. And so it was just a very well done, very well acted film.
Okay, now I did see the new version of True Grit. It was excellent. So that one I can vouch for. What are some of the others that you thought were exceptional and maybe deserved to win a little more than they did?
Well, Inception was the other really exceptional film because it was just so well told. Again, another cinematic film.
I must say that one just confused me throughout, though. I thought it was very well done. I was having a little bit of difficulty following it.
It got a lot of criticism for that, and it did spend a lot of time explaining it, but I think it did. I understood what was going on, but I was paying strict attention throughout. I generally am,
I'm pretty good at noticing little subtle nuances in movies.
Good. Yeah. But I really liked it. The movie was really, the cinematography of the film was absolutely amazing.
And that did win a few awards. Did it win for special effects? I think it,
I'd have to look it up. I don't know if we have time for me to look through the list.
That's all right.
I've got the list
right here.
It won cinematography. There you go. Cinematography. And it deserved that because it probably was the best cinematic film of them all. I would have liked to see that win Best Picture. King's Speech, I think, really is a Best Picture type of film per se. It really fit the mold of the Best Picture better than Inception.
It just had Academy Award written all over it.
Yeah, it did. And I'm just glad the Social Network didn't win because The Social Network is about bad people being bad.
And you saw The Social Network, people. You said.
Yeah, and
was it a good movie?
No.
You didn't like the way they portrayed the head of Facebook, but was the movie itself
I felt dirty watching it. It's just about bad, gross people being bad to other bad people in it. It's like the morality of the film is about, you know, it's almost like the film has no moral basis or backbone.
How
There's
has
no
the Facebook
right or wrong.
Clientele just, responded to a movie about Facebook?
I don't know. I actually didn't pay any attention. I didn't even want to see the movie. The only reason I saw it was because it was nominated and I knew I had to see it because we'd be doing a show on it.
See, movies to Mark are like homework. To other people, they're a pleasant pastime. To Mark, watching a movie is his homework because then he comes on our show and reports on it.
Only the Academy Award movies when I know they're probably not very good. I like lots and lots of movies. Like Inception, I loved. And Winter's Bone, I did that. Well, I watched that because it was a nominee, but I loved it. So I'm generally pretty positive about films. But yeah, I mean, when it's a movie that I know is bad, or the year when Slumdog Millionaire, that was torture for me.
I hated that movie.
Yeah, and I hated all the movies that year. They were torturous, and that would be a homework year for me. But you know, that's unusual for me. I really generally do like a lot of movies, and even The Kids Are All Right. That was the movie. Okay, now I have a lot of bad stuff to say about it. First of all, they stole the title from a Who movie, the rock band The Who I love. That movie was, The Who's movie's better than The Kids Are All Right, but this movie was actually okay. But I thought it got the nomination politically because it was about a gay couple, and the kids are all right, implying that everything's going to
work out
all right.
Oh, that's always a guaranteed nomination if there's
something. Yeah, but it was, you know, I have some questions about it, but I think it was well done, and I like the idea that they're putting gay people in film now because they're gay people
and there
in
were
real
some,
life.
Yeah, but I and that doesn't mean they don't deserve to win, but when you suspect that it won or got nominated for that reason,
for
it becomes kind
reason.
Of disingenuous.
Right, exactly.
Well, Mark, we're out of time. We'll have you on again soon. And
thank you,
it's
Bob.
Always good having you here. We will see you next week on The Bob Siegel Show.
Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.